Talking about the real threat to our democracy that marched through that Capitol was the threat that was symbolized by that Confederate flag. There are those who fear sharing this country with all of us who are in it. If you look at the basic argument about the stolen election, who stole it? It was voters in Philadelphia, in Detroit, in Milwaukee, in Phoenix. They are saying what the quiet part is out loud. So we know at minimum that the Harris campaign is about addressing the threat to our democracy. Now, of course, we're going to have to push the Democrats. We're going to have to push Kamala Harris to actually make good on the right to democracy, the freedom to learn, all the reproductive freedom. We know that the election is just the first part. The second part is maintaining the mobilization that put her there. That's the mistake that we made earlier on, and we can't make that mistake again. So as we come together to save our democracy, we also have to come together to be a governing majority in that democracy. That's what we're here to celebrate. That's what we're here to commemorate. Freedom Summer 1964 is the precursor to Freedom Summer 2024. This is the tip of the spear. This is why we are here.
Kimberly Crenshaw, I want to thank you for being with us. Professor of Law at UCLA and Columbia University and Executive Director of the African American Policy Forum, hosting the annual Critical Race Theory Summer School in Nashville. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Hi, I'm Tammy.
Hi, I'm Althea.
We're the hosts of The Gap on Fridays at 8 a.m.
It's a talk radio show aimed at bridging the gap in our understanding and in our community.
We talk local news, interview activists and community leaders, and invite callers for our community question.
Tune in to The Gap on KBOO on Fridays at 8 a.m.
For current events,
thoughtful criticism,
and plenty of goofs.
See you there!
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Multnomah County Sheriff defends the policy not to jail people for breaking Portland's camping ban.
OHSU has a promising new strategy for creating a universal flu vaccine.
And in national news, the USDA issues huge deli and poultry item recalls because of a listeria outbreak.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 31st, 2024. I'm Grant Button.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Earlier this week, Portland police arrested a man for violating the city's camping ban. But when they took him to jail, the Multnomah County Sheriff's Department would not book him. That's because there's been a policy in place that does not allow deputies to put someone in jail for violating city ordinances. Now, Multnomah County Sheriff Nicole Morrissey O'Donnell has released a statement backing up her decision. She wrote, quote, "As the elected official charged with managing the jail, I believe we need to utilize the corrections system as a place for people who pose a genuine danger to the public, and that does not include individuals whose only offense is living unsheltered," end quote. On Tuesday, Mayor Ted Wheeler said there was a disconnect between the sheriff's office and the city, and he said they had talked about this issue previously. Sheriff Morrissey O'Donnell continued in her statement, quote, "Arresting and booking our way out of the housing crisis is not a constructive solution. Incarceration is a costly, short-term measure that fails to address the complex underlying issues. We need to continue to focus on creating pathways out of homelessness through evidence-based, sustainable solutions that enhance public safety for all residents," end quote. The city's time, place, and manner order is still in effect, but the punishment component passed by the city commissioners, a $100 fine or a week in jail, appears to be up in the air.
Researchers at the Oregon Health and Science University, or OHSU, say they have a promising new approach to develop a universal influenza vaccine, possibly within the next 5 years. That's according to a study published in the Nature Communications Journal earlier this month. The vaccine would provide a person with lifetime immunity against the rapidly evolving influenza virus and help safeguard against future pandemics. The key was a change of approach. Vaccines that are currently produced, like the COVID-19 shots or the flu vaccine, work by targeting a particular strain that's circulating at the time and rely on antibody response. But OHSU's new approach involves placing a small amount of the vaccine into a common herpes virus, which infects people but usually produces no symptoms. The virus then triggers an immune response, allowing our immune systems to fight the flu strains in the vaccine. By using this approach, the immune system is able to recognize the fundamental components of the virus extremely well. Scientists created the vaccine using an old version of the influenza virus, preserved from a century ago. They tested two extremely dangerous flu viruses originating from 1918 and 2005 on a group of monkeys and found that the vaccine helped to protect the monkeys in both cases. This means that despite 100 years of flu mutations, the vaccine remained effective. Senior author of the paper, John Sasha, is a professor and chief of the Division of Pathobiology at OHSU's Oregon National Primate Research Center. He explained that the method used to deliver the vaccine could potentially help other mutating viruses as well. He said, quote, "It's a very viable approach. For viruses of pandemic potential, it's critical to have something like this. We set out to test influenza, but we don't know what's going to come next," end quote.
More news on the local healthcare front as four Providence patients have filed a class action lawsuit against the hospital and one of its anesthesiology firms after over 2,000 patients were potentially exposed to HIV and hepatitis B and C. These Portland area patients accused the hospital of gross negligence. The infectious disease exposure was linked to an anesthesiologist from Oregon Anesthesiology Group. The name of this person hasn't been released, but they have been fired. The exposures had been happening since 2017, though it just recently became public knowledge. All four of the plaintiffs live in Clackamas County and were potentially exposed while getting surgery at Providence Hospitals. These four patients haven't tested positive for any of the infectious diseases yet, but some of them are waiting on results. Those who were potentially exposed to these diseases were contacted by Providence and urged to take a blood test.
A new study finds litigation is a growing way to hold companies accountable for their climate impacts. Though most examples center around greenhouse gas emissions, lawsuits are shifting focus to methane emissions from beef and dairy projects. Edwin J. Vieira has more on the story.
A new study finds litigation is a growing way companies are being held accountable for their climate impacts. The Yale Law School study finds, along with carbon emissions, more lawsuits are focusing on beef and dairy production. New York Attorney General Letitia James is suing JBS USA Food Company, the world's largest beef producer, for misrepresenting the environmental impacts of its products. Yale Report co-author Thomas Poston says a win for James could be substantial for climate action.
Either JBS would have to, if it chose to continue making these claims, make a plan and implement a plan to achieve or to realize those commitments, or it would have to stop making these public commitments if it decided it would not or could not support them in practice.
The National Advertising Division of the Better Business Bureau finds JBS's climate statements are misleading. Poston notes the case could shape public discussion about animal agriculture's climate impacts. The state's lawsuit against JBS has yet to go to trial. Outside of litigation, making laws is the next best accountability measure. But unlike greenhouse gas emitters, livestock emissions remain largely unregulated. This is often attributed to the industry shaping policy in its own favor. But Yale Law School study co-author Dana Bray says personal choice plays a big role as well.
So we each can make a huge difference in terms of the climate impact of our diets by reducing or eliminating consumption of animal products, particularly in high consuming countries like the United States.
Beef, for instance, is consumed in the U.S. at an average of 67 pounds per person annually. Bray says she's hopeful about the future of activist legislation to address other issues like slaughterhouse workers' rights, animal treatment, and water pollution. This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection. This story was produced with original reporting by Gabrielle Sotelo for Sentient.
Speaking of eating animal products, before you bite into that next sandwich, listen up. 7 million pounds of processed Boar's Head deli and poultry items have been recalled due to a listeria outbreak. Just last week, the company recalled over 200,000 pounds of meat after an outbreak killed 2 people and sickened 34 more. The expanded recall came after a listeria strain matching last week's outbreak was found in other products. The first recall only covered 10 items, while today's covers 71 products, all from their processing plant in Jarrett, Virginia. They were sold under the Boar's Head and Old Country brand names. Listeria is a foodborne bacterial infection, and the bacteria that causes it can survive refrigeration and even freezing. Symptoms like fever, chills, muscle aches, nausea, and diarrhea can develop a few days after eating contaminated food. Sometimes it can take 30 days before signs of the infection begin. It's the third leading cause of death, by the way, from food poisoning in the U.S. According to the CDC, listeria is especially harmful to those who are pregnant, are older than 65, or have weakened immune systems. Boar's Head meats are sold prepackaged and also in large rolls that are sliced at deli counters and sandwich shops. The full recall list can be found at the USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service website, and that can be found at fsis.usda.gov.
Alternative Weekly's Portland Mercury and Seattle's The Stranger have a new majority owner, Noisy Creek Incorporated of Seattle. Brady Walkinshaw, Noisy Creek's majority shareholder, is the former CEO of Grist Media and a former Democratic state lawmaker in Washington. Noisy Creek is offering positions to all current staff members and plans to expand the newsrooms in Seattle and Portland. Mercury editor-in-chief William Stephen Humphrey said the publications had turned down several other offers over the years. He said, quote, "We look into people and we do a deep dive and vet them, and there was no one that we felt like their values aligned with us, until now." Taylor Griggs, a news reporter at the Mercury, said, quote, "After speaking with our current management and the new members of the Noisy Creek organization who are coming in, I feel pretty optimistic about our path forward. Cautiously optimistic," end quote. Portland Mercury was founded in 2000 and The Stranger in 1991.
The FCC tackles AI-generated political ads, senators demand Secret Service firings over the attempted Trump assassination, and the director of Project 2025 resigns as Democrats highlight its extreme right-wing vision. With more on those stories, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We're just behind this principle of transparency, which is you should simply say if AI was used. It's nothing more complicated than that.
Federal Communications Commission Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel says the public has a right to know if they're being misled by political ads that use AI. The agency has proposed AI labeling on radio and television campaign spots, although the new rules may not be in place by November. AI robocalls are already illegal after a misleading deepfake of President Joe Biden before the New Hampshire primary. Acting Secret Service Director Ronald Rowe is defending the agency's failure to fire anyone since the attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump. Rowe told a Senate committee Tuesday an investigation is ongoing.
As a career law enforcement officer and a 25-year veteran with the Secret Service, I cannot defend why that roof was not better secured.
Rowe says a communication failure with local law enforcement meant the Secret Service didn't know about the gunman until just before the shooting started. He took the place of the previous director who resigned after intense congressional criticism. The director of Project 2025 has resigned. The hard right roadmap for a second Trump term was written at the Conservative Heritage Foundation by dozens of Trump aides and allies. But parts of it, like outlawing pornography and contraception and radically increasing the power of the presidency, are proving wildly unpopular. Trump is publicly disavowing it.
They read some of the things and they are extreme. I mean, they're seriously extreme. But I don't know anything about it. I don't want to know anything about it.
Meanwhile, Trump tells Fox News he won't commit to debating Vice President Kamala Harris because he doesn't like ABC. The network was already scheduled to air a debate between Trump and President Joe Biden September 10th. Harris says she might debate an empty podium. New polling shows Florida voters support a state constitutional amendment to protect reproductive rights. Amendment 4 would protect abortion access through 24 weeks and will be on the November ballot. Lauren Brenzel is with the group Floridians Protecting Freedom.
So we want folks to know what's at stake. A yes vote on 4 is a vote to stop the 6-week abortion ban, but it's also a vote to remove politicians from this process more broadly.
The ACLU of Nebraska has filed a lawsuit claiming Secretary of State Bob Evnen ignored state law when telling county clerks to deny ballots to former felons. Evnen claims only the State Board of Pardons, on which he sits, has that authority. But the ACLU's Jane Sue says he's violating a 2005 law that returns the right to vote 2 years after a former felon finishes their sentence.
It is extremely troubling that these Nebraskans have to sue our state's top election officials just to get them to follow the law and let eligible voters vote.
I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with our own news director, Althea Billings, about the KABU Election Agenda Survey, out today. At 6, it sprouts. Then at 7, wings. Tonight's weather will be warm and clear with an overnight low of 60 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be hot and sunny with a high of 95. A heat advisory is in effect for the Willamette Valley, the Columbia River Gorge, and Southwest Washington starting at 11 a.m. on Thursday. Today in history, in 2012, American swimmer Michael Phelps breaks the record set in 1964 for the most medals won at the Olympics. The quote of the day is from the French founder of the International Olympic Committee, Pierre de Coubertin, who said, quote, "The most important thing in the Olympic Games is not to win, but to take part. The essential thing is not to have conquered, but to have fought well."
The U.S. Department of the Interior is releasing its final boarding school report. It contains a map that lists the 417 institutions that took Native children from their families in the past. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Department of the Interior on Tuesday released its second and final report on its Federal Indian Boarding School Initiative, which was launched in 2021 by Secretary Deb Haaland to investigate federal Indian boarding school policies and their intergenerational impacts on tribal communities. The report includes an updated list of boarding schools and maps with 417 institutions that provides profiles of each school and confirms that at least 973 Native children died while attending school. It also identifies marked or unmarked burial sites. The report includes 8 recommendations for the federal government, including issuing a formal acknowledgement and apology for its role in adopting and implementing Indian boarding school policies. With dozens of fires burning across Oregon and neighboring states, officials are issuing continued air quality advisories. As KLCC's Brian Bull reports, this includes regional tribes.
There's no clear forecast for how long the smokiness will last across the Pacific Northwest and Canada. Dylan Darling of the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality says there are currently 7 counties in the state that are affected by poor air quality and 5 more with intermittent smokiness.
It's been quite a busy season, just a lot of fires going in areas where they might be around for a while.
Hot, dry conditions and inaccessible terrain will keep many smoldering for weeks, even months. Rochelle Escatel, emergency manager for the Klamath tribe, says they're doing what they can with air conditioning and filtration.
We do have a list of our most vulnerable tribal members, from our elders to our younger adolescents, because some of our children with asthma, you know, are also high vulnerabilities.
Escatel adds they've received almost 100 AC units and 42 air filtration devices from the state government and have cooling centers as well. Wildfire season typically winds down in the fall when rains and cooler temps become more prevalent. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
The buffalo is an important part of Lakota culture, and a new project aims to use the animal as a positive path forward for young Indigenous people. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's CJ Keene has more.
Sacred Storm Buffalo is more than just a meat processing plant. It's a community, a home, and a career for those that choose to get involved. Now the project is receiving a $1.6 million seed loan from Indian Collective, a Rapid City-based indigenous advocacy network. Tawny Wilson is director of lending with the group.
We prioritize projects that balance meaningful impact with financial sustainability. And Sacred Storm hit the mark on every single one of these criteria. This project supports a greater network of community support in improving food security, workforce development, preservation, and supportive housing in the region.
Chris White Eagle oversees the project and serves as executive director of Wombly Ska. He says it's a meaningful alternative for young Lakota people facing challenging situations.
The fact that these boys get some stability in their life financially, and the fact that they're able to have a house that's actually, they call their own. You know what I mean? A lot of these boys have been couch surfing. They come from broken homes and they don't have a place that they can normally call their own. I think that's the most rewarding work in the whole world.
White Eagle says it's hard, but life-changing work.
When it comes to this plant, it's more than just bringing back the buffalo, getting our meat back to our people. It's saving young men's lives so they ain't getting into the court system. It's saving lives so they ain't doing nothing to take their lives. So it's more.
That was CJ Keene reporting, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The Paris Summer Olympics began last Friday, and the events are already action-packed. The U.S. so far has taken home 5 gold medals, 13 silver medals, and 12 bronze. Simone Biles helped the U.S. reclaim the women's all-around gymnastics gold medal. This was a really big moment for her and Team USA, as in the 2021 Tokyo Olympics, Biles withdrew from the competition because of mental health issues, paving way for the Republic of Congo to finish in first place. This time, however, Biles performed amazingly, and the U.S. finished on top. The U.S. also received their first ever medal in women's rugby sevens, beating out Australia for their bronze medal in epic fashion. Alex Sendrick caught the ball with 8 seconds to go on her own goal line and ran into Australia's end zone as time expired. Not only did the U.S. excel on the field, but also in water, where Katie Ledecky won the 1,500-meter freestyle gold today, tying her for the most Olympic medals ever in women's swimming. She finished over 10 seconds before the next swimmer. She now has an opportunity to have the most medals ever in women's swimming as she competes in the 800-meter freestyle on Friday and likely expected to compete in the final 4x200 freestyle relay on Thursday. Moving on to the court, the U.S. men's basketball team beat South Sudan today 103-86 in the preliminary round, a huge sigh of relief considering they barely beat South Sudan in an exhibition game, winning by 1 point on a last-second layup by LeBron James. The U.S. continues to compete at extremely high levels across sports, and this year's Olympics is no exception.
A little adjacent sports news now, as the Portland Trail Blazers and the Albina Vision Trust have announced that they will be teaming up in a new partnership. The partnership will be an effort to reinvigorate the Albina neighborhood and Rose Quarter through restorative projects. Lower Albina has long been the cultural capital of Portland, as in the city's early days, the neighborhood was the anchor point and spiritual home of Portland's vibrant Black community. But the neighborhood was subjected to systematic destruction by local authorities, building the interstate highway through the middle of the neighborhood and eventually making it the home of the Blazers. The partnership aims to have both organizations work together to develop the Lower Albina and Rose Quarter areas. The Albina Rose Alliance say they plan to speed up restorative redevelopment in an effort to deepen the Blazers' roots in Portland, expanding their impact and transforming Moda Center into a communally integrated event venue.
Oregon will receive nearly $200 million to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, awarded grants to 25 areas across the country as a part of its Climate Pollution Reduction Grant Program, and Oregon was one of them. The money will be awarded over the next 5 years with a focus on reducing emissions in 3 sectors: buildings, transportation, and waste and materials management. Lee Fielden, director of the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, said that the EPA chose to fund the agency's proposal because it would expand climate pollution and resiliency programs already in place. Some of those initiatives include Oregon's electric vehicle rebate, investments in charging infrastructure for EVs, and the expansion of an electric heater program aimed at renters. Fielden expects the federal support will help to expand these programs and accelerate Oregon's effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. She said, quote, "We estimate these initiatives will result in a reduction of 1.2 million metric tons of greenhouse gases by 2030 and 6.5 million metric tons by 2050, end quote.
The white bark pine has been hit hard by wildfires, mountain pine beetles, and blister rust, but there's an effort underway to save these western trees. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In the Rocky Mountains, vast areas of white bark pine trees have been killed by wildfires, mountain pine beetles, and a fungus called blister rust. But even in hard-hit areas, a handful of trees survive.
There in the middle of all these dead hundreds of trees, you'll see a green one.
That's Mike Durglow of the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes in Montana. He says whitebark pines provide vital wildlife habitat, and their shade helps slow down mountain snowmelt. For communities downstream, that helps reduce the risk of spring floods and summer water shortages as the climate warms. So the tribes, along with the Forest Service and others, are working to restore white bark forests. In areas hit by blister rust, tree climbers collect seeds from surviving trees and plant them in greenhouses. The saplings are exposed to blister rust and monitored to make sure they're resistant. After a few years, the healthy trees are planted outdoors. White barks take decades to mature, so it's too soon to know if these efforts will succeed.
We're not going to see the fruits of our labor in our lifetime. But our children, our grandchildren, and the next generations will. And that's why we do what we do. It's having that hope that we're going to make a difference.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Now we go to Pearl Stark from KPOV Bend with The Point Puzzle, a weekly radio feature focused on word and logic puzzles. This week, Pearl has us thinking about brand names from the 80s and the passage of time.
It's time for the puzzle.
The English word I is also a valid Roman numeral. Last week, I asked you for another common English word that is also a valid Roman numeral. Well, the answer is mix, which is 1009. Our winner this week is Derek Reese, who listens to WUTC in Chattanooga, Tennessee. For the new puzzle, I'm looking for two brand names popular in the 1980s and 90s, four letters and five letters. If you spell them backwards, you get English words. One can mean a long time, and the other might imply newness. So again, send me two brand names popular in the 1980s and 90s, four and five letters. If you spell them backwards, one can mean a long time, and the other might imply newness. When you have an answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday. Sweet and plain, I sing. This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of July 29th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
Well, it is Wednesday, and that means a visit with KBOO news poet Dan Raphael, who wants some certainty, not theories and guesses.
We'll never know how that guy got in position to shoot at Trump or why he did it, and there'll always be doubts, like whether what's-his-name shot JFK. It's hard to believe in random, in a coincidency where something historic or impossible happens for no discernible reason. In this world of constant and sudden changes, we're all looking for some certainty. Some want to find that in the leader, but hey, even if I was a capital C Christian, I'd still want to vote. Who becomes our next president is important. Who gets to be on our new city council is important. Oh yeah, and the mayor. 'Cause I still want to be able to look up, to look ahead for those younger than me and their children. So maybe working here and now is the best defense in a world about to crash one or several ways. Who will win the Apocalympics? The gold medal for corporate greed? The plutonium medal for World War III? The Mars medal for climate collapse? USA! USA! For poetic justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, July 31st, 2024. This is a volunteer-powered newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, myself, and Patches. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Catherine Carley, Antonia Gonzalez, Pearl Stark, Edwin J. Vieira, and Dr. Anthony Lijewitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Grant Button.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members, great folks like you. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, all you got to do is go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 4433.